Borzoi is well-mannered, calm, and affectionate around everyone. But beware of hypersensitivity to drugs and chemicals.
This is the Borzoi Hour.
A story that requires a pause button can't be all that exciting, can it?
We are the music makers, and we are the dreamers of dreams.
Television is reality, and reality is less than television.
All necessities provided. Anxieties tranquilized. All boredom amused.
And now for our feature presentation, the pause button. With your host, Borzoi Boskovich.
Put on your little coats. This is the pause button. I am Borzoi, and with me this week is Larry Ridgegay and Gayo De La Gay. Almost screwed that up.
More like gay.
All right, for real. This is Borzoi. With me this week, I have Larry Ridgegay.
Oh my God, my fucking mic was muted the whole time. Unbelievable. I was like Borzoi Boskovich, more like Borzoi Boska Gay. But, what's up? Out here in my littlest coat.
Yep. And of course, you can find Larry Ridgegay on Now the Third Rail, Love Street, and Schadenfreude Suppository. I think at this point, if you listen to the pause button, you listen to anything that Larry's on. And we have, of course, he needs no introduction, J.O. Del Rey. And by the time most of you all hear this, the Europa Report show will be out on the rightstuff.biz now. So go ahead and check that out. If you're listening live right now, it'll be up tonight. You said it's probably going to be up while we're recording, didn't you, J.O.?
Yep. Jay Lorenz, my co-host, is posting it nowish.
Well, there you go. If you get bored of this show... But I don't think people are gonna get bored of this one.
This is gonna be a good time.
For once, you can now listen to a pause button where I'm probably not going to reference some obscure postmodernist French philosopher. You're safe now. You don't need to hear me talk about Baudrillard or Deleuze or I don't know, Foucault. I don't know, Fucko, whatever.
Well, I'll tell you what.
We're gonna talk about Tommy Boy.
Yeah. We're talking about Tommy Boy or as it's also known, Black Sheep. I wasn't going to rewatch the movie because I'm familiar enough with it, but I had to go back through and watch it so I could delineate it from Black Sheep. And I didn't know if there were going to be any sort of profound takes to have. And I don't know if profound is the right word, but there is a lot of substance to this movie in that it's sort of a... It's a reflection on the Xers being the first generation to do this extended adolescence thing, this failure to launch sort of thing. And more importantly, it asks the question, who is your favorite little rascal?
Or Spanky.
I did not get that joke for the longest time. I saw this movie as like a kid, and then like I rewatched it. I've seen it several times in my life, even as like a teenager and a young adult. When I rewatched it, I did not pick up that half of those were masturbation jokes. I did not pick that. I don't know what was wrong with me, but I just realized this last time I watched it, like, oh, Spanky. Oh, that's all right. Now
I bet she goes out with one of the Yankees.
Whereas Black Sheep asks the question, did I hear a Niner in there?
No, that was...
No, that's in Tommy Boy.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. What number did you call? 2, 4, 6, 7, 8, 9. Yeah. I love that. so good. It's so aggravating though, because like there is a message that's, you know, in there that you could also see the Jewish one, like it's like a triumphant story, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, explain. No, this
is... Go ahead.
All right, yeah. So Tommy is. So you got Dennehy. That's like he plays the Tommy Callahan Senior. Callahan. That's like an Irish name, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, these are obvious. So if you've never seen Tommy Boy, this is a 1990s kind of dumb comedy. I have a lot of love for this movie for non-film related reasons, just because of my family. But
same.
It's set in Sandusky, Ohio, Rust Belt town. Well, the Callahans are an old Irish American family. Like you can tell from the name and just the way that they carry themselves. Like this is an old Midwestern family that they own and run an auto parts factory that employs a lot of people in this small town. Sandusky is actually kind of funny because it never comes up in the movie. Sandusky's more famous for having Cedar Point than anything else.
Yeah, the whole town definitely wouldn't have gone under. You know, the horrors wouldn't have came in had the
yeah, the movie makes Sandusky seem a lot smaller than it is. Now, it's not like a large town, large city by any stretch of the imagination, but Sandusky, because it's part of the Lake, that kind of like that Lake Erie route for the Great Lakes, Rust Belt, Midwest region, it does have industry there. It wouldn't just be a single auto parts factory that would kind of bring the town under.
It is a bit of a weird town because, like you said, they've got Cedar Point there, which for anyone who doesn't know, it's an amusement park with several of, like, I don't know, 5 out of the 10 world's largest roller coasters are there. You know, so families from all over the country head in there throughout the summer months, but the park is closed during the winter. And for an old job that I had to spend a couple days a month in Sandusky. And during the off season, it's so weird, man. It's like that part of town is an absolute ghost town. But what was killer about it was you can get these like 4-star high-end hotel rooms for like $60 a night. And there will only be 20 people in this giant hotel. It's kind of creepy on its own.
Yeah, if you're from the Midwest, at some point, when I say the Midwest, I mean more the Great Lakes region of the Midwest. At some point in your life, especially if you were a child, you and your family went to Cedar Point at some point.
Yeah, it's the I'm not driving all the way down to Disney Park is what it is.
Yeah,
I've never been to Cedar Point.
That's a shame. It's actually a lot of fun. I have a lot of fond memories of it. But anyways, you were actually going to talk about the plot of this movie. We kind of derailed on that.
Oh, no, you good. You good, man. But, yeah, so you got Tommy Callahan and his dad. He's like old money, right? Old Irish money in the Rust Belt, like you were saying. And he dies, and that leaves the company kind of up in the air because the banks are... They're overextended, right? They can't lend any more credit because the new brake pad division put Big Tom in way over his head. And so they can't do the whole loan bit. And then you have Zelensky puts an offer in to buy it out, and he wants to shut the factory down and get all of these turn all of these people into, just unemployed. Just like dispossessed people that no one cares about. They're just whatever their job, just trying to make a few extra bucks. And it's all under the guise of I'm the American working man. And Zelensky. Yeah, you were talking. That name has like a meaning. You were saying.
It turns out because that Zelensky and Zelensky. I don't know if they are the same name because it's spelled differently in this movie. Zelensky it means green basically, and I don't know to what extent it's inherently like a Jewish name, but when I was saying later on, like that Ray on Twitter, that Ray Zelensky is definitely a Jew, what I basically meant by that, more than anything just beyond the name, is the way he treats This is a thing we see often, basically, where he doesn't care about the actual people in the, you know, in that factory, but he cares about the prestige of the name. There's a theme in this movie of basically Tommy having to make the case that there's more to something than just, you know, just a name. Like that, you can actually see that symbolically. Like I'm probably giving this movie more weight than it deserves, but you can see that symbolically with himself is that he's more than, you know, he's like he throughout most of the movie he's just a Callahan, and there's really nothing in there inside until he's able to prove himself to that. But with Zelensky, he's only obsessed with the name, and this is something that comes. But this is something we see constantly where, aspirational Jews tend to be kind of obsessed with the prestige factor, will often hollow out institutions or just do what they can just to get that name. I mean, look at like what's happened to Harvard, basically. Like the prestige factor of it, of the name itself was what was chased, but the actual value of an education there has completely been diminished after it's been co-opted and hollowed out more or less. And that's exactly what would have happened to the Callahan Auto Parts factory. Like what those brake pads would have ended up happening to them. Like if, you know, this movie like had gone differently and kept going on, was basically the quality would depreciate completely while he tried to basically milk that name for all it was worth till it was just another discredited brand, which we see time and time again in the capitalist system more or less.
Yeah, well, I mean, Zelensky says that right in the movie, too. He actually says, like, I don't care about... He's like, I just want the Callahan name. I think that's like exactly what he said.
And that stuff happened, like, let's Michigan Post here, Borzoi. That stuff happened in the auto industry so many times. You know, some company would come in and buy out some... you know, small, maybe even unionized UAW place that like, maybe this one only does die work or sheet metal work or whatever. And then some foreign investor comes in, buys it up and, you know, fires everybody, moves the plant, you know, or they just start making all kinds of cuts and everything falls apart.
Yeah, and that's like this, that's why this was an interesting movie for me to watch nowadays, because at the time that this was written and directed in the mid 90s, you were already starting to see the effects of globalization, you know, NAFTA creep in to the country. This movie doesn't really reflect that, but you can feel the anxiety that's creeping all over the entire film. Now it comes out just because it's through like of this businessman like Ray Zelensky, but you know what would end up happening, like again, like kind of like, you know, if we were to extend what happens in this movie, like what would end up happening is like then those brake pads get produced in Mexico and get shipped back into the United States, you know,
with the same packaging.
Yep.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry to interrupt you too. Zelensky wasn't the only anxiety though in this movie, Borzoi. Don't forget the whores. There's a lot of anxiety about the whores coming back in if the town was ran down. I can't stress that enough.
Well, that's that's what kind of makes this movie quaint as well, because that's a really funny moment. But I mean, the reality is, like, yes, the prostitution would end up like coming into a Rust Belt town, but you all like. We also like weren't really aware of this kind of the extent of like what this problem would become in the 90s. But I mean, now what would also be flooding the town at this point? Opiates, drugs, any kind of, you know, other stuff like that. Like that's like you would see a major problem happening in a town like Sandusky if an auto plant that was employing hundreds of thousands of people suddenly shut down. More than likely you would see more of the, you know, it wouldn't be like an overnight thing more than likely, but you would see the, you know, once again, like just it happens on the edges, and those edges move closer and closer in until it basically engulfs an entire town.
Yeah. But it, I mean, also like the things that are happening in the movie, you can also think of it as, kind of a message, right? Because he's failing like the entire movie, but he has to have, there's like a wake-up call, you know, because he's just kind of Farley plays like a bumbling fuck. Jay was saying about how you know, the prolonged adolescence. Like, he's just, a lot of people go to college for 7 years, man. He didn't even like, he didn't even know what it's called, and he's just smoking weed and getting fucking hammered all the time at college playing rugby. And like, he doesn't even have a suitcase. And I mean, what's that say? The drop off and just the way you're living your life. Like, you go from his dad, who is like a refined, like, I mean, his house and whatnot, like, that's old money. Like, the dude has class and whatnot. And then you have Farley. Like, what, I mean, what happened? Yeah. That is like, there, it illustrates the total disconnect in like the generations there. Like, that's,
well, yeah, he is the Xer, and his dad is the boomer.
Yes. Right.
Yep. His dad, like, sort of had the world and economy to build a business like this, did not maintain it, did not raise his kid to keep his shit together. And this is the outcome, is that now he's like 30 and panicking, trying to save the once thriving family business because he hasn't been held to any standard until now.
I mean, yeah, actually, you can signal about the dad, aside from him being like a boomer in age, he doesn't strike you as a horrible person, right?
Well, that's
he is holding it together, and he wanted to keep it as a family business.
Yeah. If he was truly the eternal boomer, he would have sold regardless.
Well, this he didn't want that. So I'm going to talk about both of those points. The first being, there's a great scene early on where Tom is going down the hallway talking to, you know, the other people that work on his board and the bank manager, and he's recounting, you know, the story of Callahan Auto, and they're going past all of these, you know, very well done professional portraits of everybody who's ever run the company, and he's recounting like a lot of the hardships like that how they basically made this company themselves, and they ran it through the Depression. They survived it. And then one of them had to go to war, and then his sister, which was Tom's aunt, ran during that point. It closes on Tommy, like, with him sticking through, and you can like see the contrast between this failure to launch Xer and these older generations of Americans who went through struggle and try to keep this coming together. And the link to all that is the boomer father. Like, but this is the thing, like, we are always shitting on the worst aspects of the baby boomer generation. Like, we sometimes do have a very cartoonish view of them, and it's easy to have that because a lot of them do actually correspond to that. But I have boomer parents myself, and I can tell you that from my perspective on this is that boomers had a lot of boomers just had a very sweet, good-natured perspective on raising their kids. So the idea of, like, well, you know, like, I don't want to over, you know, like, if I let them kind of do what they want, they'll figure it out. They need to find their way, kind of thing, without giving them the proper guidance. And then because they, you know, a lot of them did love their children so much, they overparented in a way. Like, you can see this concept where he's always giving Tommy surprises, and he still kind of treats him like his baby boy constantly when he's nearing 30 years old, up through to the, you know, up to the wedding. He's never put his foot down the ways he should have done, in the ways that he should have disciplined his son. And that's a common theme I've seen in the baby boom generation. Like, it was a story of my parents as well. I mean, I love my parents very, very deeply, but I can see, like, kind of that too good natured for their own good, in them and a lot of people that they know as well.
I agree with all of that. And just so everyone knows, Borzoi and I will deliberately not be discussing the ethnicity of the director and producer of this film. We are running cover. Don't look it up yourself.
I wanted to ask. Sorry, guys. I was muted whenever there was that long pause there. I was fucking again. God damn it. I wanted to ask, actually, who did direct this?
Peter Siegel, and it was produced by Lorne Michaels, both Jews.
Jesus Christ.
Well, it was written by a non-Jewish married couple, actually, the Turners, who they but that's not like, which I found interesting, like, which is, I think some of their sensibilities are probably reflected in this movie, though they tend to write like a lot of, like, I think they wrote Wayne's World, they wrote like a lot of the SNL style comedies.
Did these guys do any other movies? What were some other movies? The Lorne Michaels and
Lorne Michaels has had his hands in everything. I wouldn't even know where to start on that. So yeah, he's the founder, SNL, and basically anything that was an SNL bit or anything that had, like, I would bet, I don't know, 80% of all of Will Ferrell's movies are produced by Lorne Michaels. Everything that Mike Myers is in. I think Adam Sandler produces his own movies through his Happy Madison production company, but I think Lorne Michaels has executive producer credits on the majority of his movies too.
Oh, great. So this guy's a total fucking scumbag.
Yeah.
But yeah, so think about this too. So you guys know, I mean, spoiler, everybody has fucking seen this movie.
if you need like spoiler warnings for Tommy Boy, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. Hit your call button and we'll come back and hit you on the head with the tack hammer because you're a retard. but no, so think about this too. So like Tommy, they barely pull it off, right? By the skin of their teeth. You have that, you know, that niggers, that the groid is like...
I like how you stopped, considered that, and thought that helped. go on, please.
I'm sorry, dude.
I don't care, Larry. It's fine. Like, everyone kind of expects that when you're on, but I just like that you were trying to be helpful.
You went back to the drawing board and came back with that.
That groin.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you guys remember you had that the colored man. He was like after he gets Zelensky to sign the paper. He's like, oh, you know what the hell? I'm gonna own the company in like 25 minutes anyway, right? And that Groid goes, Tommy just sold $500,000 brake pads. Like he's giving a Martin Luther King speech or something at the end of the movie, and it interrupts into fucking, they're all so pumped. But he barely gets it done by the skin of his teeth, and they pull out the victory at the end. So think about this in terms of like what this movie means for the white race. If Tommy is indeed the avatar of the white man against the Jew in business practice.
You were sending me some pretty hot takes throughout the day about this movie. This was not the take I was expecting to hear on the movie, on the podcast.
Go back over that one.
Oh, about Tommy being the avatar of the white man against, you know, it, like intruding Jewish influence. Like it's trying to fucking get the, the Goy becomes aware of the Jew, and actually how he wins is he magnifies and shines the light on the Jew. And he's like, look what this motherfucker's doing. You're going to put these people out of work. You got to sign this. You got to sign this paper, my guy. You got to let these people have their jobs back. And he's like, well, that sounds great for the American working man. And he signs the paper thinking that he pulled one over on Tommy, but that's not true because Tommy thought about this shit, you know, before using his goyish intellect and whatnot. And so you see what I'm saying? So Tommy is like the avatar for the white man.
Again, yeah, look at the dirty tricks that they tried to use to bomb the company out so that they could buy it with the messing around in the computer or whatever.
Yeah, and it's just like, and it's funny because Zelensky's response to Tommy then is that he says, he's like, well, you pulled the wool over on me this time, but you won't get me again. And but you know, we don't see what goes on in after the fact. But
so if we're going with this perspective of analysis on this, then does that make I can't remember the character's name, Bo Derek and Rob Lowe, does that make them basically conservatives, more or less?
No, I would say they're more, you know, Jared Kushner, Ivanka Trump type people.
Oh, okay.
They're like the,
I could see that.
They're the ones that stand to gain from this. What did they want to do? They wanted to sell the fucking company and make and get all that money. But Tommy figured it out because he found out they were actually married.
So just like with the Kushners kind of sniffing out for a rich Gentile family to marry into, you have them sniffing out a wealthy white man from the Midwest.
Yeah.
Yep. Doing the computer fraud bit, you know, when they go into the office, they're doing all this extra legal shit. How, like, they went into the fucking, you know, that lawsuit that guy filed against the SPLC, how they got those records from the National Alliance back in the day.
Yeah.
Doing shit like that, like real shady shit, and doing all this stuff that's illegal. And all Tommy did to win was shine a light on that, like on national television. And I mean, that's how he won. You know, you got to make people aware of the Jew.
Not the take I was expecting on this
movie. Yeah, I see where he's coming from in that. Actually,
no, I can see it.
Like I watched the movie and I was like, what takes could there even be about Tommy Boy? And then like when I remembered that the Zelensky character existed at all, I was like, oh, here's our Jew narrative.
Yeah, no, that's totally him. And like the things, like the way that the Jews portray the white man, you know, the white crusaders, like look who they use as the avatars. Fucking David Spade and Chris Farley. You have this sarcastic, like,
yeah, you have a nerd and an obese idiot.
Yeah, like a fucking David Spade is like resigned to the town going under because remember he's like, you know, I like her idea better about the whores, back to the whores. He was all about that, and then they're on the road immediately after the fact. And you had you were saying?
I was going to say, he's the prototypical bug man.
Yeah, yeah, because he knows all about this. Remember Tommy was like, la, 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 Luke. And he comes into the office, and he's like, yeah, I know you'd like to stay in here and like continue being not slim, but you have to work a little.
Half this episode is just gonna be us quoting the funny lines from the movie.
Oh yeah, pretty much. And then he's walking out of the room, and you have Farley makes that joke to him. He's like shitting on David Spade's character in this movie. He goes, "That was from Star Wars," and Spade's like, "Yeah, I know." And like he shits on him a lot throughout the movie. If you like remember, like, so Tommy comes back because he hung out with all the cool kids in school, but David Spade's character was the nerd. Remember how David Spade pours his heart out at the end, like Bugman, faggot, beta bitch, like, sad, you know, all this other stuff. And
he also didn't have a dad.
No, he didn't. So, and you know, that's like the future. Like, this is the future. Like, this barely won this time. And it's only gonna get worse. Goy, I mean, fool me once. Oh God, like shame on me. Fool me twice, never again. Ah!
You know, this is kind of off topic, but not entirely. Call Johnny. Have you ever seen David Spade and Ellen DeGeneres in the same room?
I'm pretty sure they have been, probably.
Nope. Same.
Don't ruin it, Larry.
I mean, yeah. Same person.
Hey, Larry, he's got my back.
David Spade's a lesbian, dog. Yeah, that's so gay. No,
I shared a, Borzoi mentioned sort of briefly in passing earlier that he has fond feelings for this movie because of his family. I have the same thing. Like, my family did memes from this movie my whole life. Like, my dad's a fat guy, and if you get him within 10 feet of a little coat, you're going to hear a song.
Oh, that's a good song.
One of the reasons why I have a lot of fond memories of this movie is because I don't know a lot of movies that kind of cover the Midwestern geography as much as this movie does. And it might seem like we're so small that this, like, but it actually is really cool to see them name different cities, like Oshkosh, or I'm trying to remember like some of the other ones that are like, and then like seeing like Detroit in there, and I like, again, like these are all very small things that, but it's because we're so, especially this is in like, I had weird feelings about this because like nowadays, like, I don't think you're going to really see that much, like even just like a kind of a name recognition, because Hollywood movies are moving more and more towards like when they're set in a town, it's usually just like, they just usually just set it in California now, or like it's a nondescript town, or it's some made up, like if it's, even if it's the Midwest, it'll be like some kind of made up town usually.
Yeah.
And it's just like, everything's become so nondescript, doesn't feel rooted anywhere. So like to know whether to, I doubt this was even filmed on location, I highly doubt it, but like just to kind of like get that sense of like, there's, this isn't a place, this isn't a place that's real, and connecting it with that kind of Rust Belt experience, that's like, that's really what I'm just trying to get at, is like this, as superficial as it is, it feels rooted in a place. And I remember just like growing up, like this is like, you know, this is a movie about places that I grew up around.
Yeah, like you'll probably know this because we're both homers, but I was discussing with somebody how I was discussing this about the vagueness of locations where movies take place. Like, does anyone who's not from Michigan know that the American Pie movies take place in Michigan?
Oh, I didn't even realize. That's right. I forgot about that.
Huh.
Yeah, it's like alluded to like twice, I think, in the first and third movies. It's alluded to.
Dude, you are fucking insane with the Michigan shit. Every time there's like mention of anything, like Jay sees someone's hand and he's like, bro, Michigan is like a hand, man. You know, I used to live right here. And then like he's like, yeah, there was a little mention in the first and third movie, just in passing. I caught it though. Shit took place in Michigan, man.
That's me.
It's like J.O.'s the fucking alien guy with the whacked out hair, and it just says Michigan. It's just like...
saying it was Michigan, but it was Michigan.
Larry, I'm the exact same way. Like that's how all of us from Michigan are. Like, I don't know what it is about the state of Michigan, but like we are so enamored with our own state. It's like it really kind of puts other states to shame, just the level that we are enamored with talking about our home state.
Well, when you can see this contrast so starkly, when you are in such a beautiful place, and yes, Detroit is a big black shithole, whatever, but when you are in such a beautiful state with so many good things going for it, and you have the stark contrast of you know, God's most hated and forsaken place, Ohio, right there. Like, when you can see it from there, you realize how good you have it. Like, the grass does not look at all greener on the other side of that line.
Wait, so fucking Ohio is like Mordor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You guys are fucking hilarious. It's funny because you got guys from Michigan in the chat that are like, Michiganders go on endlessly about Michigan. It's what we do. And then we got my niggas in Somalia, Minnesota gang. We in Somalia. But no, I'm sorry, man. What were you saying?
No, well, it's a heart. Well, what it is, it's because, I mean, Ohioans do it too. And like every state in the Midwest, especially the Great Lakes Midwest, we all do it in our own way. Like, just there's a very particular, like, there's actually from the Evil Dead musical, there's a line where person screams at Ash, like, are all men from Michigan such loudmouth braggarts? Which always has.
Well, I'll tell you what. You want to talk about state chauvinists? Go spend a week in Texas.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you could be like me. I'm a fucking huge state supremacist.
I mean, Texas, Texas is like its own, like really is its own thing. But anyways, the reason why like, the Midwest is, and every state is kind of particular about it in their own ways, like, this was the heartland. This was the heartland for America for such a long time. And we are very aware of that in our bones and blood. Like, just the way that, like, it was part of the industry that built this country. And then they just have it all go away, have it all sold away. And we, like, we're still here. I mean, what are we supposed to do? Like, this was and is something special. Like, and we were always aware of that. Like, how, like, and we just want other people to kind of like see that as well.
Essentially, in 1994 or 95, Tommy Callahan saved the company business, but 10 years later it did go under. And yep, that's more than likely, what we come from.
And think about this shit too, because like you have them there's a scene I was telling Borzoi about that right after his dad dies, right? And he's walking down that road, and it's a beautiful scene. It's a fall scene. He's surrounded by trees walking down that road, and all the leaves are blowing all over the place. And it's a beautiful scene. And then he walks into you see him walk into the factory with that hat on that, you know, it's associated a lot with Irish people. You fucking, a lot of people wearing, yeah. You look like a jackass in it, but,
it's just a flat cap. Damn.
Yeah. It's fucking like a dumb cap. It's like a modern day dunce cap, but you have him, he's walking in and the scenery there, it's just, it looks so run down and it looks like hopeless. Nobody's there.
Frank's playing it right now.
Oh, it's like a fucking ghost town. And he sits down and like you have the funeral song playing, and it sort of gives you the feeling like, man, everything's just going under, everything's going to shit, and he's still trying to work it all out. He's in like the black pill stage right here. He's like, man, everything is fucked around me.
Yeah.
And then they start the quest to like get it back and make shit work, and they barely pull it off. And as J.O. said, you know, J.O., I think it was J.O. that said it, 10 years later, it does go on. I know it was like fucking 2 minutes ago. I can't remember, but,
Ten years later, it still goes under.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of, Tommy Boy's funny, but that's, and in a way, that isn't that what, like, you know, the J's do? They get you to laugh about things that, you know, should really make you angry.
Yeah.
Like, you're watching a movie that's about, like, the downfall of white civilization as, like, because generational wealth is just going to go, it's like going down the shitter because people aren't worth anything anymore.
Yeah, it's kind of like Mike's narrative, which is true, that every time you see, like, someone doing a funny racism on TV, you know, you're not laughing. You're being laughed at. Like, my wife put on Borat the other day.
Oh,
and
God.
There's the running of the Jew. And, like, they're all chasing the Jew and, like, it lays an egg or something. They're making fun of racists. They're not doing the racism. And in this, they're making fun of the Goyim.
Yeah, and those Kazakhstanis are supposed to be Eastern Europeans. In fact, they're played by Eastern Europeans.
Yeah, it was Romanians.
Well, and then like we could talk about a little about like the sales trip if you guys want to.
Yeah, and we're not going to really need to stretch from material because we still haven't even hit any of basically my notes. So please go on.
No, tell me about your notes, dude.
No, I want, like, go on to the sales trip. Like, I'll just hit through my, I don't have a ton of notes, but we'll just hit through my notes, like, if we, when we need more material.
Fuck, I should have wrote down some notes and shit.
No worries, like, so let's talk about the sales trip.
I don't even know where my phone's at.
was it something you sent me? You said that one, bureaucrat gang trying to keep Tommy from his inheritance in the company. I don't think anything about the sales trip was in here. But do you remember what you were going to say?
Oh, no, like his portrayal. So, I mean, Tommy in the beginning of the sales trip is sort of, it's his coming of age story. Like
it's almost like a training montage from a karate movie.
I was just going to say, you're the man. But that's what it is. It's just like a prolonged scene of that. And they even have music to it, right? They have fucking Patsy Cline singing Crazy in the gas station where Tommy breaks his door. So Tommy, in the beginning of the whole thing, he's a dickhead, right? He has a fucking clip-on tie. He's an asshole. He's not making any sales. Nothing, dude. And remember, he wants to drive his fucking car into a bridge. Like... like he's having a really rough time, what happens is he has that mental breakdown, and then he gets into a fight with Richard, his companion.
Not here, or here so much, but right here. That's another meme my family does all the time.
Nope. Ship shape, and then fucking Helen comes over.
Yes.
Helen,
God bless both. Helen.
And she's like, oh, God, what happened to your face? I knew.
Oh, man. For anyone who hasn't seen it, they get in a fight. He whacks Chris Farley in the face with a 2x4 or whatever, and he's got a big mark there, and he's trying to tell him it's fine.
If I wanted to kiss, I'd have called your mother. Oh, yeah. Hey, buddy, is there a window open? There's a draft.
But the Helen scene is kind of telling. I just watched him whack it in the face with that stick. Anyway, he turns the corner. Finally, he's got this diner waitress, and the kitchen's not open. And he tells her he wants some wings. And she's like, kitchen's closed. He's like, are you sure? And she just looks at him and says, I'll check. Yeah, it is. But he talks her in to turning the fryer on to make him some wings. And that's sort of where he has turned the corner and learned how to sort of sell or influence people.
But what makes me angry about this scene is that he doesn't do that the rest of the movie. Because the way he, like, what makes this woman turn the fryers on is because he's sick. God, you're sick. After,
yeah.
Like, she feels sorry for him. And then she walks away and Tommy want wingy and shit.
Tommy want wingy.
And then, you know, so then we got fucking, and then after they do that, he goes into that conversation with Richard and Richard Spade's character, and he's like, you know, look, you got what you, he gives him the breakdown. Like, you know, there's two kinds of smarts. Book smarts, which waved bye-bye to you a long time ago. if he's the avatar of the white race, and this gets into, like, this gets back to, like, what I say all the fucking time, is that white people are fucking stupid. Like, they don't actually read books. That's why they don't know anything. And, you know, yet Spade, the bug man, you mean, you're dumb. You a dumbass motherfucker. And then he's like, oh, but you have street smarts. You know what people need to hear. So that's like Tommy can only win through manipulation sort of thing, right?
So what you're saying is that basically Tommy was like the prototypical racist podcaster, more or less.
I mean, maybe.
Well, no, all of Tommy's pitches, it's funny because they also sort of expose his goyishness in that he's not a salesman. He's not, you know, good at sort of bullshitting people or whatever, and all of his sales pitches come down to being these obnoxious, like, rants where he starts destroying stuff. There's the biscuit, you know, my naughty little pet. He's got the biscuit that he destroys. Or when he's trying to sell the brake pads to the guy in his office, he's like, so you're driving down the street and you saved a couple of bucks on your brake pads, and then bam, you go slamming it, and the EMT gets the two guys puking his guts out, and he's lighting fires on this guy's desk.
Jail. Do you validate?
Get out now.
Well, then, dude, think about this, too.
The first medic gets out, he's like, oh, my God. The new guy's over the
No, but then you have, like, the... Remember when he makes his first sale? The guy's like, you know... You don't got a guarantee on the box. And he's like, well, I mean, the only reason they do that is because you sold your guaranteed piece of shit. he tells him that story, and he's like, bro, he's like, listen, he's like, how do you, the guarantee fairy, but how do we know? He's not a crazy glue sniffer. Build model airplanes, says the little fairy, but we're not buying it. He's like, first you got money to sell off the dresser, then your daughter's knocked out. I've seen it 100 times. So, but then, like, and then he's like, okay, I'll buy from you. And it's like, wait, what the fuck just happened?
If you want me to take a dump in a box and mark it guaranteed, I will.
I got spare time.
I guess if we're going to like the journey of the white man interpretation of it, that's like that's basically how a lot of us end. Like it, you know, like the story I've been telling about my friend who's been like slowly learning this stuff. It's like you get to a certain point, it's like, wait, how did we get here again? What just happened?
Yeah.
Yeah, Jay, I've seen it. We forgot like the main one throughout the movie, guys. The it's like, hey, you can get a good look at a butcher's ass by sticking your head in. Like the many iterations of the T-bone steak and the bull's ass and the butcher's ass. And then he finally gets it at the end on Zelensky, doesn't he?
Yeah, he finally nails it at the end on live TV.
He has this sort of ism. I think it's you could get a good look at a T-bone steak by sticking your head up a cow's ass, but wouldn't you rather take the butcher's word for it? And he has like 20 different fails of like, hey, well, if you stick your head up your ass, maybe someone will give you a steak, but the butcher said words.
Wait,
it's and everybody just looks at him like some kind of asshole.
Yeah, it's got to be your bull.
Yeah. Well, since we're talking about, like, since we mentioned now, at least like the guy he makes the first sale on, there's a great callback to that later on when he's got like the fake bomb strapped on. He's basically doing this hostage situation, fake terrorism, more or less in there. And this is a great kind of like reflection of just how normies are, where the guy he sold the brake pads to, he and his wife are seeing this on news. She's like, hey, honey, would you take a look at this human bomb? He goes, oh, yeah, I bought brake pads from this guy. I thought we were watching cartoons. That's the normie reaction anytime terrorism occurs, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. Oh, man. Oh,
well, and that just happened.
I sent you a text about that scene, too, I think. I already mentioned it.
Well, I mean, we could talk about that. Let's see. He had to fake a suicide bomber to get. Yeah, you said he had to fake a suicide bomb in order to get people to listen.
Yeah, because I mean, he was censored, right? Because he was kicked out of the meeting where any say like where there was any real like basically not the public square, but he was kicked out of the meeting, the shareholders meeting, where the other party
I can actually connect this to your interpretation. Like, so this is the white man's journey. Like they're having a meeting about his family's company. This is his birthright and he's not allowed to have a say in it.
Yeah, and his overall family, if he's the avatar of the white man, is the white race as a whole, and you have a boardroom filled with fucking Jews and like cucked conservative whites who make up the fucking board. Yeah, he puts that suicide vest on, which is really just a bunch of road flares that because he ate paint chips when he was a kid, right? And he goes to that. Yeah, Zelensky, did you live under power lines when you were a kid? But no. So he gets into the office. He has to do something really crazy to get anybody to listen to him.
Yeah, it's. I mean, like, look. I mean, I know she's Jewish, but look at like the like. Look at what being silenced has driven Laura Loomer to do. Basically, she is one step away from doing the Tommy Callahan bit of a suicide bomber vest, but with actual explosives, probably in her case. Oh.
She is gonna light herself on fire, sitting Indian style in front of the fucking Twitter headquarters.
That's like probably gonna happen. It's not even a joke. It's probably gonna happen.
Like that Chinese.
Did you see her meltdown on Alex Jones?
Oh yeah,
she's like jumping around, screaming and crying.
Yeah, and then I saw someone on Twitter. I don't remember who it was. They were like, "Oh, this is sad. If you want to help her, donate." And I was like, "Yo, fuck that bitch." It's like she was all pumped when everybody else got censored. Who cares about her? And she's a fucking Jewess. Like, nah, nibba. Yeah, but wait. Yeah. So back to Tommy Boy. But yeah, essentially he goes in and he has to do something crazy to be heard. And then he pulls the wool over the Jew's eyes and wins barely. And you know, Tommy Boy 2 next time, like Tommy's kid is going to be like, you know, a mulatto or something.
Yeah. The company's sold. He has like a coal burning daughter and he's on opiates.
Yeah. He's like dying and I don't know. But Borza, you said you had notes, man. I think that was
All right, so I'll just quickly run through my stuff here. All right, so
yes, papers. You guys, he's like, oh, let me get the documents out of my briefcase.
Wait, your briefcase is over here.
He's like, how could you open?
You were saying, Joe?
There's a pretty girl outside.
Good for her.
It's like, he's like, I bet you she goes out with one of the Yankees. Couldn't tell you.
Richard, who's your favorite little rascal? Is it Alfalfa or Spanky?
What's that new funny comedian, Buddy Wackett?
I did warn everybody. We were just like half this episode would just be reciting lines from this movie.
Yeah,
I want to do Tombstone eventually, and I think I can recite the entire movie. So it's just gonna be me doing like tough guy Doc Holliday quotes.
Trad Life says shuffle paper, so there you go. All right, so let's see here. I got the movie about the Midwest. Tommy's from Sandusky. Mentioned Cedar Point. He goes to college at Marquette University, which is in Marquette, Wisconsin. So just more.
Isn't Marquette also like a fucking? Sorry to interrupt, but isn't that also like you know, one of the CIA schools and whatnot to put out a lot of this fucking nonsense? And you know, you had like McGill and whatnot.
I would not know.
I don't know anything about that.
Let's Google. Like,
it sounds like we're John and shit.
Mark, let me see if I can find a Wikipedia page I can read.
Yeah, I mean,
Marquette, CIA. Here, Marquette University has an occupational targets thing. Mm. So let's see here. So occupational targets at Marquette University. I have no idea what this is about. I'm not reading this. Anyways.
Is this thunder coming through my mic?
No, I don't think so.
A hurricane, dude. It sounds really bad.
I don't hear it.
I was kidding. I was lying.
Geeks. There's a Geek Squad CIA in Marquette, Michigan, apparently. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I feel like this was one of the schools that was involved because, like, you know, the music and the whole music scene from the 60s was, like, made up, and that was, like, a fucking psyop. It was all fake.
Oh, yeah. That was Laurel Canyon, I believe.
Yeah, Laurel Canyon. And I feel like some of those people had ties to Marquette University because I know some of them went to, like, McGill University, and Stanford was one. Then you had... This has nothing to do with anything we're talking about. I'm sorry. Jesus fucking.
So, I wrote How to Make a Solid Comedy Without Too Much of a Crutch on Lewd Humor. That now defines movies.
Yeah, there were a good number of sort of like dick and poop jokes in this.
Yeah, they're a little more.
We just quoted like five jerk off jokes in a row after talking about sticking your head up a bull's ass.
I didn't pick up for the longest time what those like half of those jokes were. It's like a little bit more subtle compared to now, but like I point taken.
Borzoi would be like, "Yeah, this is a good, clean Aryan movie." the eternal Asian infiltration wants to demean our people, but
All right. One thing about the education thing that really kind of stands out as well, just. Because I mean, this is kind of tracking back to like this extended adolescence failure to launch stuff. Is that you have Big Tom talking about, you know, he and his family, none of whom were college educated, that made something of themselves, and they were able to use those street smarts to run a business and all that. So, and this is a common thing with, you know, this was a big thing that was for my family. Like, I was the first person in my family to ever graduate from college, which was a big deal, and then, you know, I floundered in my own career for quite a long time, but there was this obsession with the prestige of an education, and look what, like, with sending, the, like, even back then, like, sending your kids to college often ended up being pretty much a joke, and look at the way, like, what it ended up doing to these people, more or less. They have none of the of the values or prestige or even the kind of like in a good application of their own street smarts that, you know, the Callahans had before they sent their kid to college.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot, like, I'm, as you're like saying this stuff, I'm thinking about how this might sound kind of weird, but the whole movie really is just, in that sense, it's like racial, the whole thing is like racial cuckoldry. So, like, you have the great accomplishments of the generations before him, and then you have Tommy being the white avatar, and he's just a huge fucking failure. Like, and compared that to, perhaps I'm like a wrong word for it, but he like compare that to everything that's going on before. Like, you feel totally lesser than if you identify with Tommy to like all of the other classes, and like, you know, you're a slacker and all these other things. So you barely. And then to, I don't know, to barely make it through, I don't know, dumb point. Sorry.
I don't know why I wrote just-in-time logistics on here. I just, that's all I wrote. Just
Shit. And then, like, think about how Tommy was, like, what Tommy, his innocent ideas for fun.
I was kind of going back and forth on that, if that's them making fun of Rubes, like with the cow tipping stuff, because Tommy is an idiot in this movie, so I don't know if what he's supposed to be representative of exactly. So I wasn't sure if this was like a kind of like humor. This is like, this goes back to the thing you were saying before, Jay, like, you know, when they present a certain caricature that even if you find it funny, like they're making fun of you kind of thing. So with the whole cow, you're also referencing the cow tip.
Anyone who grew up in a town of less than 100,000 people is someone who runs around falling in cow shit for recreation.
What the fuck, man?
But I mean, like, Tommy's not very representative, I think. Like he's like, I don't know. Like, it's like one of those things is like, we might be even be looking too deeply into it. I just don't know what the
I don't know, man. I kind of do, because Tommy, I mean, think about it, man. Cow tipping, that isn't fucking, like, who cares about that? It's fucking funny. Like, I think that's hilarious. And that would be fun to do. But then this other guy's idea of fun, he's like committing crimes and shit, like breaking into things, trying to shoot out, like blow up fucking trucks with that gun when he gets bit by the dog. He threw a milk carton in that baby carriage and punched that kid in the face. Like, do you guys remember that?
I love that scene. You're talking about Rob Lowe. Like, that's one of my favorite scenes where on the kid in the bus, he hits the bus window.
Yeah, he punches the bus window, finishes his chocolate milk, and throws it in the fucking...
What a shitbag.
And I don't know, man. And I got this dude here. Animal abuse is never funny, dumb point. Yeah, but bro, compared to throwing fucking milk cartons and baby carriages and whatnot, and, you know, breaking into things and blowing trucks up, I'll push a cow over. I don't give a fuck. And I mean, like, I think that that's good. You got him trying to influence Tommy the first time they hang out, and it's fucking, you got him trying to influence Tommy the first time they hang out to do, like, horrible shit. Tommy just doesn't even understand it. So. Yeah.
Frank seems to be very adamant that cow tipping is funny, so.
Yeah, that's right, dude. It is funny.
I don't remember the scene, but I must have noticed it when I was watching it, though, if I wrote this down, because I wrote Ohio to Chicago mountain, LOLOL.
That's the flattest drive in history.
Yeah.
Like, that driving around the Midwest will actually make you start to consider flat Earth.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's a higher proportion of flat earthers in the Midwest compared to the rest of the country.
Are you
okay, yeah. Yeah, this is actually like, I mean, this isn't really anything worth analyzing, but I always crack up when I see this. I guess this little thing for people. I think they become more wise to it, so they've tried to cut down on this, but this was especially prevalent in media from the 80s and 90s, where they would set something in the Midwest. And you would see, because like they're actually filming in California, basically, you'd see mountains like in the background. And we don't, in case you weren't aware of this, we do not have mountains in the Midwest. Like the Great Plains are flatter than we are, but it's pretty flat.
Yeah, there's mountains here in the Upper Peninsula, but the drive from Detroit, Chicago, or Ohio to Chicago, totally flat.
Yeah.
Mountains in Chicago.
There was a quote from Zelensky I wrote down, which was perfect in this movie. I mean, like obviously, like you learn in later in the movie that Zelensky is, a villain. He says at one point that what the American public doesn't know is what makes them the American public.
Whoa.
I don't think there's really worthy. Like I think that kind of is just like it's just one of those obvious. Like,
have you ever tried DMT?
That's the little things that I just enjoy about this movie. Like I imagine if somebody's never seen this before and they see it because of especially how we keep quoting it and raving about it, they may not even end up liking it as much as we do. But going back and seeing this movie again, I know like basically all media more or less is, you know, has these intrinsic problems to them. I'm well aware of that. But you know, we all have these fond affections for media from our childhood and youth. And when, you know, even when you get kind of woke to this stuff, it's these little things that you can like appreciate more when you have this perspective. And that's one of the things I enjoyed enough to write down that like when you have a better understanding of, it's not just the mean old, it's just not the mean businessman that's doing this to, you know, to the little Rust Belt town. This is a systemic problem. This is an entire globalization problem.
This is a huge problem.
Yeah, that too. It helped me kind of just appreciate the movie from a different perspective. It's just a dumb comedy at the end of the day. I mean,
like, yeah, like just have fun watching a fat guy fall through a table. Like, it's gonna be funny every time. Every time. How many tables did that guy go through on Saturday Night Live?
He
probably had a separate guy just to make tables for Chris Farley to fall through.
And he was probably the funniest comedian from like from SNL from the 90s easily. I mean, I don't know, some of his later movies weren't that great, but I mean, like Matt Foley, legendary skit he did. I mean,
you'll be living in a van down by the river.
It's still one of the best sketches that SNL has ever produced, which I know like that's not saying much. That's,
you know, really which one I was nodding to recently before I announced my wife's pregnancy. I was doing some sort of I had told, you know, some people and I was doing a lot of subtle nods. One of the things I was doing was tracking the, like in the pregnancy book, it's like this week your child is the size of this fruit, then this fruit, then this fruit. So I was doing that, but then when I actually made the announcement, I switched my profile picture to the Richmeister, and it dawned on me that like all of the Zoomers and Millennials wouldn't know why that's clever or funny to apply the Richmeister to having a kid.
I don't think I remember the Richmeister.
Making copies.
Oh, that, yes. Okay, that one. Yeah, now I remember that one.
Yeah, and I mean, like, so Boris, what movies did you think were funny from him? Beverly Hills Ninja I thought was pretty stupid. I liked Almost Heroes, was hilarious. Dirty Work was funny.
Dirty Work was fucking hilarious. We should probably do a show about that sometime.
I don't think I've ever seen that one.
Oh, hey, my God, you'll love it.
He's like, yeah, this is the Saigon whore that bit my nose off.
Crossing guards grabbing eight-year-olds' asses. Crossing guards grabbing eight-year-olds' asses.
Oh, my God.
No, but like Almost Heroes was one of my favorite movies that Farley did. And I tell you what, I actually think that he was slated to do a more serious movie. And I know that Farley was actually cast as the first Shrek.
Yeah. That would have been very interesting had he a Farley Shrek.
Well, they have a video.
That Scottish voice, Mike Myers, just iconic at this point.
Yeah, well, like they have a video of Farley reading the lines for the Onions bit.
Really?
On YouTube, yeah, dude. Type it in.
Is he doing a Scottish accent?
No, it's just him. He's like
Frank. Go ahead, pull that up. While we wait on that, the one skit that I always I think one of the best skits he ever did was the one where he did the talk show. And he's just, all he's doing is just asking guests, remember, which is always funnier to me now after like people kept quoting Sam Hyde bits back to Sam Hyde.
Yeah. So then I started doing it on the show.
Yeah.
Hey, Sam.
David
Sam,
Duke.
Sam, remember when you said it, Sam, when you were like, when you were like David Duke? You remember that, Sam? The David Duke?
Yeah, when you have a bit and people keep bringing up like that, I always just think of that skit now.
Yeah.
You know what skit I really liked on SNL back in the day, and I'm kind of embarrassed to say it because the guy's a fucking homo.
Hmm.
Was the Garth Brooks when he's singing the song and the devil comes in. The devil was Will Ferrell, and he's talking about selling his soul to like learn how to play guitar, but Will, he's like the worst guitar player that there ever was. And he tries to teach him how to fucking rap and shit, and he's like, because I'm the devil, and I'm here to say that I'm the most evil rapper in the USA. All my ladies, all my bitches, say
All right, we got Chris Farley as Shrek.
No, this is one of those drop it and leave me alone things.
Well, why don't you want to talk about it?
Why do you want to talk about it?
Why are you answering the question with a question?
Why are you asking questions I don't want to answer?
Why are you blocking?
I'm not blocking.
Then why do you have problems expressing your wants?
I don't. I want you to shut up. See? No problem.
You're just displacing your anger.
Believe me, it's properly placed.
You're really mad at whoever did this to you.
No one did anything to me.
Yes, yes, yes. Someone hurt you so bad. Someone hurt you many years ago.
Leave my parents out of this.
Right?
What a trip.
No, but it's so crazy. I feel like he would have been a much better fit. I mean, aside from that Scottish douchebag being like an iconic voice now for the part, Chris Farley like sort of embodied that bit. I mean, even in his personal life, because like we all look back on Farley now as like this beautiful, not like physically beautiful, but like his role in our childhood and when we were growing up. Boris, I think we're around the same age.
Yeah, he was my favorite comedian growing up. Like as a kid, like he was my favorite comedian.
So like the role that he played in our lives was like beautiful. We look back on that, but like I mean, that dude's life was actually pretty fucking depressing.
Yeah,
for those who don't know, Farley went on to die of, what, a cocaine overdose?
Yeah, it was a drug
1997.
Yep.
Yeah, and...
Yeah, I was just a kid.
He was into, like, the prostitutes and other stuff, and prostitutes, cocaine, and shit like that. And he died alone, and he wanted to have a family and whatnot, but it didn't work out for him. But in, like, he would have embodied the Shrek character, because as an ogre in the movie... The emphasis in Shrek is on the ogre being beautiful, and what they're trying to do is show you that, you know, it's not all about the looks. Like Shrek is beautiful on the inside, and mm-hmm. it runs parallel to like what our perception of Farley was looking back on, like the nostalgia. And
yeah, whatnot. Yeah, yeah. Good point.
Yeah, the weird thing was watching this. I mean, like I'm not saying he was thin. He's obviously obese, but I don't know. Like I had this mental picture of Farley being even bigger than he was.
Well, maybe the funniest bit he ever did was the dance off with Patrick Swayze to join the Chippendales.
Well, one thing real quick, I think the reason that you might think that he is bigger than that at Borzoi is because, you know, the camera adds like a couple hundred pounds.
And well, at different periods of his career, he was fatter than others.
Yeah. Yeah. He was super fat. And people have gotten so big now. I mean, like you know, you see this like Tess Holliday that they're trying to normalize and whatnot, and then you go back and look at Chris Farley. Like, he looks downright thin by comparison.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and his I don't know, just it would have been really cool, Shrek.
I don't know why I wrote this note.
And we get stuck with that fucking asshole, Mike. Is that guy fucking? Is he a Travisman?
No, his parents are Scottish.
Yeah, Scots in Canada, basically. That's why he does the Scottish voice so well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Kind of surprised, actually. I just assumed that all of these people are.
Yeah.
No, Myers is like, no, he's Scottish, but I mean, like, he's very, very, like, Anglo in the Canadian sense, basically. I mean, yeah. He even played the British officer in Inglourious Bastards.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Like, that movie did, like, fucking terrible, dude. God, yeah. Quentin Tarantino, fucking Tina, that... Jesus Christ.
Foot fetish, nigga.
Yeah, what a giant asshole.
I don't know why I wrote this note. I wrote, talk about liberals' love of factories closing down.
Well,
I'm not wrong. I just don't know why I wrote down.
I was going to say, who are the cheerleaders in the movie for the plant closed down? I would say it would be like the conservatives. Because the
whores.
Yeah, well, they need that business, dude. They need that office space. They need that prime, that prime quarter to post up on. But who would have been the people cheering this on? I think it would have been big business.
Well, then both, really. I mean,
not at that point in time. Weren't that the demon rats? They were in the mid-90s. They were still like, all right. Hell, this was around the crime bill time. Democrats were still like based by today's standards at that point in time.
Well, yeah. This is the funniest thing actually about this. Now, I don't know. Because this is a dumb comedy. Like, I'm not trying to, like intellectualize or, like, expect, like, realism from something like this. But one thing you don't hear any mention of in the movie whatsoever, which is kind of shocking, given that this is an auto parts factory in the Midwest, any mention of, like, a labor union or anything like that. And I don't know what the situation in Ohio would have been, but, I mean... Like, I guess just because of the experience that you and I have, J.O., from being from Michigan, with the power that the UAW has. It's just, like, yeah. It really just kind of goes, like, in this movie, it just really, like, when you're aware of, like, how unions were so intertwined with the automotive industry, and maybe that doesn't apply to the suppliers. I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't apply to the suppliers. But when you know, like, how intertwined all of this stuff is, like, it is funny, like, not to notice, like, there's no mention of anything like that. These people are all out on their own in this movie.
Yeah,
there's no one there to advocate for them.
No, there isn't. Yeah, there is no mention of unions, but they're also being treated well. I mean,
it's a family business. That's
yeah. I mean, the
reason why.
Remember when Tommy walks through the factory? The atmosphere, everyone's like yelling, screaming. That's not how work is. But you had that the black guy walking on. Well, he's there with the like sanding down that brake pad part. Hey, Lewis! Hey, Tommy! And he goes over and starts doing that. It's just the atmosphere and whatnot. So I guess this is... Well, it kind of glosses over the unions, but it gives you an alternative because it's sort of a
cohesive... Yeah, which is just a good relationship.
Well, yeah, it's a family business, so it's a small factor. There's a time, like, there was a time period when this kind of I mean, this is played up a bit, obviously, but there was a time period when this was a reality, like, where, because, like, you know, you had a couple of small industries in small towns, and so obviously everybody there would know each other, more or less, especially if they came from these much older, tight-knit communities. I mean... The paper mill, I believe the paper mills of New England were once like this as well. I mean, it used to be like you had, that town had one industry that it revolved around. Now, obviously, like we mentioned this before, that this wouldn't have been the actual case for Sandusky. It's a little bit of a bigger town than,
and they would have,
it's implied in the movie, but.
And they fought to fucking keep it in their town. What you were saying there about how like there was an industry in these towns because they understood that there were things that could happen, policies that could be looked at and, you know, taken into consideration if we're like looking at this from like more than just a movie or whatnot. That like if you do these things, it will actually kill the town itself. So these people actually would put up a fight to things that would be not beneficial to them. This is when a flashback to a time when whites actually fought back and gave a shit. Now we're all stuck in our fucking cell phones and eating garbage food that, like, you know, turns you into like this fucking someone who doesn't even think about anything. It's like a mind control thing. We're so enthralled with all this new modern shit that all of this stuff. I mean, hell, even Tommy displays a lot of agency in the, like, more agency than a lot of people today exhibit in the movie. Like, he's able to conceptualize these things. I don't know, but
I think I'm out of takes.
Yeah, I think I've exhausted. I mean, like, I wasn't sure how much we were going to get out of a comedy. Like, I know I wanted to talk about the Rust Belt angle, but yeah, I think that's about all we can really cover with this. I guess we get to the part where we recommend it or not. Like, I have fond memories of this. I do not expect, like, being that this is the pause button, we are like trying to get every piece of meat off the chicken bone, basically. Do not expect the kind of intellectual exercise that I'm trying to force into this movie. It's just a really funny, dumb comedy. I really like it a lot. I'll always have fond memories of this movie, so I recommend it.
Yeah, check this out.
Larry? Oh. I think you're muted. Larry's going to say something, and then...
Yeah, I like this movie a lot. It might come off as, like, corny or something to some younger people, but, yeah, it's a dumb comedy where, you know, a fat guy bumbles his way through a situation, and then everyone's happy at the end.
It's got great writing too, in just terms of like snappy dialogue. Just really fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, we quoted most of it throughout the movie, but the scene of him rubbing the car air freshener all over himself and
put a little heavy, put a little heavy on the Pine Tree perfume, did you? Yeah. No, I mean, another thing that I don't know if we mentioned it or not. It was also like, it was nice to watch too, because it's kind of a tale of like white camaraderie and whatnot, the friendship that you know grows between Richard and Tommy, who are on two opposite ends of the social spectrum.
One of my like, in terms of that camaraderie, like, this is one of my favorite things about this movie is anytime they're with the music, like when they're dealing with the radio. That's like, those are some of my favorite moments in the movie, where they're either arguing over the radio or just singing along.
Don't you remember you told me you loved me?
Baby, 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 baby. Oh, baby. This movie also has Come On Eileen, which is one of the greatest songs ever written.
Yeah. Or them trying to sing along to It's the End of the World as we know it.
Yeah.
And they just start trailing off.
Come On Eileen. That was sang by what? The All-American Rejects?
Oh, next Midnight Runners.
I'm just kidding, but I would definitely recommend this movie. I will say this, however, I prefer Black Sheep myself.
Before you got on the call or before we started, I was like, okay, Borzoi, like, I'm gonna bance this movie by saying like, oh, you mean Black Sheep, and then what he needs to do is like a month from now, post, you know, on the site, the pause button, Black Sheep, and then just repost to this episode. It's the same damn movie, but they're both funny and they both have good memes in them.
That dude, Black Sheep was hilarious.
The weird thing about Black Sheep is that it was directed by Penelope Spheris, who directed Decline and Fall of Western Civilization, which is a documentary about punk rock bands. I always found that a little bit odd that she directed this dumb screwball comedy where Chris Farley screams "Kill Whitey."
Yeah, and then the niggers. I mean, the black dude. The,
it's okay, Larry. I don't mind.
So yeah, you got the groids there. They were like, no, 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 and they're smoking weed in the back, and he's like, so wait a minute, and no, real quick. So you have Chris Farley is smoking weed in a room full of groids, and he's like, he ate all them chicken wings. He's like, so wait a minute, guys, you're telling me that you guys, I'm the man, Whitey, and you guys are the victims of an oppressive, racist, violent society. And like, I'm going to talk to someone and get this straightened out. And like, that's what, and that, it's like, first off, he's going to talk to someone and fix racism. And yeah. Then second, yeah,
I think
like,
I know a guy.
I'm going to talk to, let me give Mike Enoch a call or something and get this whole thing straightened out. But he's what was I just saying? God damn it.
Fuck. Kill Whitey.
Yeah, kill Whitey. So, I mean, think about that. That's where, you almost have to be high to believe that shit.
Yeah.
Well, Pud Honey brings up a great point. What's funny about that kill Whitey scene is that the white crowd was appalled.
Yeah.
Dude, Pud Honey was also, that rhymes with the name of the band that played at Rock the Vote, Mud Honey.
Oh,
like stacks and stacks of blah, 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 blah. You know, remember that song?
Yeah, they came out of the Seattle scene. They were kind of like a pre-grunge band or something.
Can we get out of here so I can eat my Chinese food?
Yeah, guys.
Now I'm fucking starving. All right, yeah, so we'll wrap it up here. And I guess like we might be doing a Love Street right after this as well, so I don't know. Listen to Larry and Love Street. With that, I'm gonna push the pause button on this.